Thing that probably the greatest, one of the greatest elements to being a winner is having someone in your corner who's for you, who's behind you, who supports you. As illustrated in Natalie's song, there is nothing more that God can do in our lives than He's already done. What I mean by that is certainly we've not seen all the miracles that we could see in our life, but God is there for us. He's done all that He can through His Son, Jesus Christ. He's done all that He can to make us successful. He's given us our life, our breath, our abilities, our talents. He's given us His Word to guide us. He's given us His Spirit to come and live inside of us. He's given us renewed power that we don't have on our own. But all of that is useless unless you and I do something with that which God has given us. It's useless. Now, it's fantastic to know that God's your corner man. As some of you know, last week I was talking to you about boxing. One of the reasons I like boxing so much is because there is no one else that you can really blame for your success or failure. It's you and your corner man. Your corner man's got to give you good advice. He's really the person cheering you on when you're getting up early in the morning. No one else sees you and you're doing your road work and you don't want to do it. He's there, urging you on, encouraging you. That's the way God is in our lives. God is not against you. God is for you. The Bible tells us in Isaiah that God waits on high to have compassion on our lives. God is our fan. As Paul says in Romans, if God be for me, who can be against me? You see, we have God in our corner. God told Joshua, do not tremble or be discouraged because the Lord your God is with you. God is with you. But if you don't act on that, if you don't do anything with that knowledge, then to be quite honest with you, you'll never be a winner. Winners are not accidents. Winners are not born, they're made. All of us have a variety of abilities. All of us have different strengths. But with God's help, and with the trademarks of a winner, the things we're going to talk about in the next few weeks, you can be a winner in the daily arena of life. In life, you can win in relationships, in your marriage, in your parenting, in your job, in your career, in all sorts of things that you've probably not thought I could really win. We all look at athletes with great admiration. We all look, as John was talking about, at these Olympians. We see them training day after day after day. And you know, there's something very alluring about their lifestyle. Even though what we generally see is the glory of the moment. We see this individual who's been training for years, hours a day. Hours a day for just a moment in the limelight. And yet, you know, what's always alluring to us about an athlete is their vision, their purpose. They have meaning in their life. They know where they're going. I find that most people I talk to do not know where they're going. They don't know exactly what's going on in life. In fact, most people let life happen to them. Rather than taking life by the horns and doing something with it, they simply are like a little pinball. Whichever way life hits them, they go. They're aimless. They don't know where they're going. First characteristic of a successful person, of a winner, is this. They know that success is their own personal responsibility. It is not the systems. It is not the governments. It is not their teachers. It is not their parents. It is not their spouses. It is their own. Now that goes totally against the grain of our society in America today. We are tending more and more towards socialism all the time in the United States. Why? Because we're a country that likes to blame everybody else for our problems. We like to blame the Japanese. We like to blame the unfair trade practices. We like to blame our poverty. We like to blame the color of our skin. We find all kinds of excuses, our lack of education, for why we don't succeed. Do you know that's only a modern day phenomenon? Our forefathers in the 1800s be appalled at the things and the philosophies they hear people saying today. And so would our forefathers in the early 1900s. It's only been in the last 30 years that we've developed this mentality that the world owes me everything and they're holding me down. That's not true. That's not true at all. Winners understand that they are responsible to bring good into their lives. Now, it may not happen right away, and I'm going to talk about that's a subject matter that we're going to talk about this morning. But you may be sitting here this morning thinking to yourself, well, you know, I can't succeed at life because my parents didn't give me a good start. And I can't succeed in life because I'm married to a witch. And I can't succeed in life because I'm married to a jerk. You know, this guy is just nothing. I can't succeed in life because somehow genetically we got bad kids. You just can't be a good parent with these kids. And Mark, if I had your kids, you know, that would be a different story. But I got my kids. I just can't succeed where I work because the management stinks where I work. Those morons, they don't know what they're doing. But we're a country with excuses. We're a people with excuses. And you know what else happens? I find when we find successful people, we always make excuses for their success. Well, Barry Sanders, he was just born that way. You know, Bo Jackson, I mean, come on. Just that natural God-given ability. Let me tell you this little quote. I saw this in a movie the other day. I thought it was a really good quote. I'm going to remember this forever. If you don't want to, that's fine. But I think it's true. Success does not come from what God gave you. Success comes from what you do with what God gave you. And that's very true. If you do not develop your potential, if you do not develop who you are and what you can be, no one's going to come along and do it for you. But God gave it to you if you use it. If you use it. The first primary trademark of a winner, other than they understand their success is in their own hands, is that they're people of vision. Now, what are you talking about, Mark? What is vision? Some of you don't know what vision is. I'm going to talk about it briefly this morning. Winners are people with vision. They know where they're going, they see it in their mind, and they go after it until they get there. They have vision. Vision is the only thing that will help you do the other thing I'm going to talk about this morning. Without vision, you'll never keep going. You'll never keep going. The Bible tells us in Proverbs, that without vision, the people are unrestrained. Have you ever asked yourself why you don't have a whole lot of staying power? Why it's difficult for you to stick with something? It's because you don't have vision. Because you don't have a restraining dream that keeps you focused. Now let's talk about marriage for a moment. Why aren't people hanging in marriage? I'm convinced the primary reason is they don't have vision for the marriage. They don't have vision of what it could be. All they see is what it isn't. And so they give up. And so they quit. I see parents doing this with children. All they see in the child is what the child isn't, instead of what the child could be. And they work towards that goal. They work towards that goal, and they do not give up. They're relentless. But without vision, you have no power. You have no staying power without vision. That's foremost in a winner's mind. They said that. I was reading an article the other day about Larry Johnson. It was in the paper. He's a UNLV star who's now playing, I think, I don't remember the team, actually. But anyway, he's playing professional basketball. And he was sharing when he was young, you know, you look at these guys, they all look like they've always been so big. He said, when I was a kid, I used to get beat up on the basketball court all the time. He was raised in the inner city of South Dallas. And he said, I used to go down there, I'd go down there Monday through Sunday, every day, 7 to 8 hours a day. I played basketball. I played when my feet were on fire. I thought my feet were going to burn off. And he said, you were lucky if you didn't get in a fight on Monday through Friday. You better not show up on Saturday because your time was going to come. And I was always smaller than everybody else. I used to get picked on, beat on, hit. He said, but I kept going back. I kept going back. Now let me tell you something. You're bound to succeed when you do something 7 to 8 hours a day. You're bound to succeed when you have a vision in your mind of what you could become. But I want to talk to you this morning about more than just athletics. See? Because you know what you find with these people who are in the limelight is usually they're very successful in one thing, but the family's a mess. And what I want to try to do is help you become a winner in the things that really matter. Your family life, your job, your career, your parenting, your friendships, with yourself. Those are the things that really matter. Everything else is just a game. There's nothing's going to make up in your life, no success for messing up your family, for being a loser in family, for being a loser with your kids. I was reading the story, or watching actually the story of a man the other day on television. He was sharing his story of how he came to know Christ, a very famous individual. And yet in his family, he failed. And just recently, and he just broke down on national television in tears. He said, I went down, my wife and I fly to Florida to see our son who had been shot 5 times in the head because of his addiction to cocaine. And he just broke down, and I watched this individual and I thought, what a tragedy. What a tragedy to have succeeded in some professional arena but have failed with your kids. I want to tell you, no Super Bowl ring, no any ring is going to make up for the pain you experience in your life. God wants us to be winners in the game of life, in the things that really count. But the second thing that you've got to have to be a winner, and this is what I really want to focus on this morning, is staying power, the ability to persevere. We are, to be honest with you, I'm just giving you my assessment of what I see today in young people and in middle-aged people and in older people and in society. We are a society of quitters. We're a society that quits very easily. When the going gets tough, we get going. We leave. We don't hang in there. We don't hang in our relationships. We don't hang in our family life. I hear parents all the time, say, well, you know, when they get to their teen years, say, I just wrote them off. Tough. I tried to do everything I could for them. That's the way they're going to be. Tough. Parents don't try. They don't hang in there. They don't keep giving it their all. You know why? Because we're so afraid of failure in this country. We are so afraid to fail that moms and dads, we would rather pretend we just gave up and they did their own thing than to face the fact that we failed. And we go look for immediate gratification in other things. I'll tell you this, I am convinced personally that one of the reasons moms and dads today are so consumed with their careers is because how would you like to spend the next 20 years of your kids raising 3 kids and failing at it? How would you like to spend the next 20 years of your life giving it to some kids that don't care, you blow it with them, and they grow up and hate your guts? What do you have to show for your 20 years? And I believe, personally, that's one of the primary reasons parents are walking away from parenting emotionally. They may be there, they may live in the same house, but they're often not really involved. Why? Well, because failure is devastating. We're scared to death of failure. But you see, you don't have to be destined to failure with God. If you know how to persevere. If you know how to hang in there when things get tough. Life is not easy. If you haven't discovered that yet, I can say this to you this morning. Life is hard. There are things about life that are very difficult. Good things aren't going to come just overnight. You don't just get lucky. Luck really has nothing to do with life. When God is involved, it's God's blessing. And you don't have to work for God's blessing, but you do have to work for character. Winners are people of character. That is, in whatever profession they're in, it doesn't mean they have character in their moral life. But to some degree, maybe to, you know, 25 million times more than us, they're people of character. They have deep character. They hang in there through pain, through thick, through thin, they keep going. They keep going. They keep going. Without perseverance, you will never accomplish anything in your life. Ever. I want to say that again. Without perseverance in your life, you will never accomplish anything. The Bible says, do not grow weary of doing good, for in due season you'll reap if you don't give up, if you don't quit. One little verse I think about almost every day, I have for the last 17 years of my life. It says, therefore, do not throw away your confidence, Mark. What does that mean? Do not throw away your vision. Do not throw away your confidence, your hope. For it will be richly rewarded. You have need of endurance so that after you've done the will of God, you'll receive the promised blessing. We need the ability to endure. You see, we need some hang time in life. Hang time in a basketball court doesn't mean anything compared to hang time in life. You've got to be able to hang in there. Hang in there. Listen, your marriage isn't going to come together the first week you're married. My marriage has taken 13 years to come together. And now it's almost like it's firing at all 8 cylinders. And yet, you know, a year from now, it'll come together even more. And And I find young couples today just giving, I mean, this stinks. This is awful. Well, of course it is. You haven't been married very long. You need a little practice. And not to mention the fact that most people who get married don't have a whole lot of character when it comes to marriage. You find out what you're really made of. I want to tell you this, people. You find out what you're really made of when you get married. You find out just how selfish you are, just how perseverant you are, just how loving you are. I'm amazed at how childish we can be. Well, if you're going to be that way, I'll give it to you too. Huh, you think you can pull that one on me? Fine. I'll see. We're just like little kids. I'm amazed at the counsel I give in marriages and couples. It's like talking to two little three-year-olds in preschool fighting over a toy. And that's no joke. And you know it because many of you are married. And we've all acted the same way. It's character that we need, people. It's character. It's the ability to persevere beyond, to see the good in that situation and keep working till it comes about. I want to read you a little article I cut out. This is by no means perfect, these two stories I'm going to read you this morning. I just thought they illustrated one aspect of perseverance about two people that most of you know and have heard about, but I think these stories will be a little enlightening. Every day a fatherless boy gazed at the fence separating his family's ramshackle cabin from the Glen Lakes Country Club golf course on the outskirts of Dallas. What chance did a poor Chicano with a seventh grade education have of becoming welcomed into that world? Yet the boy was determined. First he gained entrance to the grounds as a gardener. Then he began caddying and playing a few holes at dusk. He honed his putting skills by hitting balls with a soda bottle wrapped in adhesive tape. Today, no fence keeps Lee Trevino, two-time U.S. Open winner, from being welcomed in any country club in the nation. Sure, Trevino had talent, but talent isn't what kept him from quitting after he placed an embarrassing 54th in his first U.S. Open. His secret was perseverance. Persistent people know they can succeed where smarter and more talented people fail. You too can succeed if you will follow their strategy. As author Christopher Morley once said, big shots are only little shots that keep shooting. That's the truth. Now I want to share something with you about Lee Trevino. Lee Trevino, in my opinion, is not a success in life. He's told his first two wives, and they may be on his third wife, you're not first in my life, golf is. And it ruined both of his marriages. I don't consider that being a winner. But I shared this story to illustrate to you that success does not come to the talented, to the beautiful, to the noble, to the born affluent. It comes to those who are determined to persevere and do what's necessary to win. And I think in that light, he's a good example. Let me read you the second story. In her 30-year career, one broadcaster has been fired 18 times. But on every time, she set her sights on something bigger and better. When no mainland radio station would hire her because they thought women couldn't attract an audience, she moved to Puerto Rico and polished her Spanish. Notice she didn't sue. Prejudiced. Prejudice, harassment. She simply moved. And she polished her Spanish. When a wire service refused to send her to an uprising in the Dominican Republic, she scrapped together money to fly there and sell her own stories. In 1981, she was fired by a New York radio station for not having kept up with the times and was out of work for more than a year. One day, she pitched her idea for a new talk show to a man who worked for NBC Radio. I'm sure the network would be interested, he said. Then he left NBC. She met another man at NBC Radio and presented her idea for the show. He also praised her idea, then he disappeared. So she persuaded a third man to hire her, but he wanted her to host a show on a political radio station. I don't know enough about national politics to make this work, she told her husband. Yet, in the summer of 1982, she went on the air. Drawing on her familiarity with the microphone and her easy confessional style, she talked about what the 4th of July meant to her and invited callers to do the same. Listeners connected immediately, and she became known as the Dear Abby of the airwaves. Today, Sally Jesse Raphael is a two-time Emmy Award-winning host of her own television show, reaching 8 million viewers daily throughout the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom. I could have let those 18 firings prevent me from doing what I wanted, she said. Instead, I let them spur me on. Now, let me share something with you about Sally. Sally's life has been filled with tragedy, and just recently, You've seen that. I wouldn't exactly call her family life, again, a success. So I don't consider her a true winner. But I believe her story has a lot we can learn from. 18 times being fired. People tell her she couldn't do it, so she simply moved to a whole other country. And today, she has tremendous influence. God wants us to be winners in the things that matter. That's our family life, our character, in every aspect of our life. He doesn't want us just winning in one arena of life. He came to give you an abundant life in every aspect of your life. God never destined you to fail. But God can't help it if you won't pay the price to be different. I read a little quote the other day. It was sent to me in the mail, an advertisement by a man named Ernie Larson. And it just caught my attention. It said this. This is very profound, so listen careful. If nothing changes, nothing changes. It's profound, isn't it? If nothing changes, nothing changes. That's very true. That's very true. Let me read you a quote, another quote. I think this is by a man named Calvin Coolidge. It says, press on. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful people with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. And education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Perseverance, persistence, and determination alone are omnipotent. People, that's the truth. That is the truth biblically. Nothing will take the place of perseverance. Nothing. What is it that you'd like to become? Let me ask you that question. Do you know where you're going? Do you know where you've been? Do you know what you're going to be in 5 years, in 2 years? What kind of goals do you have in your life? Do you want a house? What are you doing to get a house? I find so many people today in society making excuses. Making excuses. I know people that are making, with their combined income, $60,000, $70,000 a year, yet they just can't get by. They just can't get by. They just can't get by. They just don't know how they're going to make it. All I hear primarily today from young people, middle-aged people, farmers, everybody is grumble, grumble, grumble. Life, you just can't make it. And yet I want to tell you something. I was raised in the heartland. I have a number of friends that were farmers. And I'm not saying the farmers are getting a very good deal because I don't believe many of them are. But I can also tell you this. I've met many of them who scraped and clawed all their life. And they're making it today because they could control their passions and their desires. And instead of buying a tractor that would plow a field at one time, I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean, they worked double time to use the tractor that was already paid for to do it. All of us can be the same way in life. I meet young people today, the minute they get married, they want two brand new cars, fill the house on their awards card or their Dayton's card with brand new furniture, and everything else they can buy because they think that's what they're supposed to have. You know what's wrong today, people? You don't know how to persevere. You don't know how to stay content with what you have and so that you can really realize your dreams and your passions now, your lack of self-control now is robbing you of what you could have in the future. And it will continue to drain your energies and drain your energies and drain your energies. And you know, it's tough today. It's a lot different, moms and dads, for many of us than when you were raised. And I'll tell you one of the differences. I'm a father. I got four children. It's not easy sometimes to make ends meet. Next thing you know, about every week, you get a new credit card in the mail. A new company that wants to give Mark Darling $4,000 line of credit. Why, I could have 20 of them right now. Different companies. Every time I get one, I cut it in half. Every single time. Yet I was watching the news the other day of a young couple. They were maxed out at $55,000 on their credit cards. Why? Well, they just thought they'd always have a job. And then everything went under. We like to blame the economy, don't we? We like to blame management. But you know, the real problem with people today is they have no idea how to persevere and say no to temporary pleasure for long-term gain. That's what separates winners from losers. You know, it's interesting how often in life we can feel victimized. How often we can feel like we can't change our circumstances. About 2 years ago, I found myself getting a little more a little larger than I desired. And I know you find that hard to believe. People always go, Mark, you know, you just exaggerate. But I'm not exaggerating about this. You know, I'm only about 5'8", and I weigh 170 pounds, and I'm very small bone. Most of you gals might, you know, have a wrist the same size as mine. I didn't like it. I didn't like my kids calling me Jelly Belly. And I didn't like, you know, gals, you think sometimes you get harassment? Well, let me tell you what guys do. Guys, they go, hey, Mark, look at that gut. And they come up and grab you right in the stomach. Have you ladies ever had anybody do that to you? I thought not, because you get sued, see, if you do things like that, you know? But guys, they think other guys really get into that. I don't know why, but it's like, hey, oh, nice gut there, Mark. I've even had women do that to me. Nice tummy, Mark. It's really uplifting. You know, it's really encouraging. So I started thinking to myself, you know, this is really bad. I went from a 28-inch waist to I went to a 33-inch waist. I don't like this. I don't like looking at me in the mirror. And I don't like putting a swimsuit on. And I don't like the fact that I don't have stamina to play with my kids. I don't like this. But I kept saying that for quite a while. I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like this. But then, of course, you know, then you start to get silly about it. And I walked around like I was pregnant. I just go, here, Gabby, look at this. 4 months pregnant. See? You know, I just kind of joke about it. Make light about it. And then I realized, you know, I really do need to take care of my health. Number one, because my body's not mine. It's God's. It's God's. He bought me. He owns me. And I want Him to be able to get the most for His service out of this body. Secondly, I need to be an example to my kids. What kind of example am I going to be to my kids? I thought about that. So you see, what we're working on now is called motivation. See? So I started thinking about some motivating principles. I started thinking about my health and getting the maximum out of my body and discipline, and I didn't really have it. I didn't really do a lot of exercise because I don't really enjoy it. Bottom line is I don't really like it. Takes up time and I thought I was too busy. So I got motivated by Herschel Walker's story about his push-ups and sit-ups. See, I thought maybe I could look like him if I did it. I really did. I really believe that. It's amazing what you can do if you pretend. So I really believe that could happen. See, so I started doing 300 push-ups every day and 200 sit-ups every day. It, of course, in small increments. So it's like every few minutes, if I was watching TV during a commercial, I'd pop down and do some. See, I was under the impression that you could just sort of spot work on your body. Now, you know, give me an A for effort, an F for knowledge. I didn't really understand you couldn't, but I kept going after it, I could feel I was getting stronger and stronger, but I wasn't losing the fat. I wasn't losing my belly, and that's what I wanted. So I realized I was going to have some sort of aerobic effort to my life, and I didn't really want to do that. I hate running. I like riding a bike, but I don't like sitting there riding a bike. But we have one sitting in our basement, and it's been there for 5 years. Okay? Been there for five. I bought it for my wife because she wanted one. She likes them, see? So I bought it for her. That's her thing. I don't like it. Well, I thought, well, you know, I better, you know, to take care of my heart, I better get on the bike. 10 minutes. I'll go for 10 minutes. One day I'm telling Blake, yeah, I'm doing really good. I'm going 10 minutes on my bike. He goes, Mark, that's really good, but you know, I got to tell you something. This is where knowledge comes in. He says, in order to have aerobic benefit, it's got to be 20 minutes or more sustained. I said, you got to be kidding. You mean I got to double that thing? He said, well, I'm just trying to be honest with you. You know, you're not, in fact, you might as well not even ride it. To do 10 minutes is useless. I thought, oh, great, I got to ride that crummy bike 20 minutes. So, see, I hang around with these guys like John and Doug, you know, these little Hulk guys, these ex-wrestlers. It's pretty hard hanging around these people all the time, these guys, you know, because I'm 10 years older. You know, and they're young, and I keep telling them, wait till you get 30. Then your waist will be that big, too, you know, and then it'll go up every year with your age, you know. And I thought, Lord, I got to do something about this. I'm not going to make any excuses. I'm getting a new vision of what my body could be. So I just started thinking about what it'd be like, you know, to be a size 29 again and to lose that 20 pounds. You know, it took me 2 years. But 2 years later, I lost 20 pounds. And now I have this habit in my life. I keep working out. I want to tell you something. Perseverance is the secret. And it's a lesson I've learned long and hard in my life. I want to end with just telling you basically the story of my last 17 years. 17 years ago, I'm going to put it into just a very few minutes, okay? Now, if you just sit back and relax for another hour. The reason I want to tell you this is because most people's church experience is that you come and listen to a guy talk who, quite frankly, doesn't many times. I don't want to say this blanket statement here. Many times, doesn't do any of the things he says. I read a quote the other day that said most psychologists do not do the things by their own admission that they tell their patients to do. That's comforting, isn't it? It's called hypocrisy. We're used to that in our country, all right? We're used to athletes who don't walk the walk. We're used to politicians who don't walk the walk. And to be honest with you, we're used to pastors who don't know what they're talking about but act like they do. So I want to tell you a story this morning, and it's true. And if you want it verified, why, you can come up to me later and I'll show you the information to verify it. I graduated from high school in 1975, a hippie. A late hippie, but a hippie nonetheless. That's what I wanted to be. I was aimless, without direction. I skipped about 80% of my senior year. I hated school. I hated books. I hated learning. I didn't like it. It did not motivate me. I got A's in music and A's in phys ed. The rest were C's and D's. And I really didn't care, because that wasn't my goal in life. I don't know what my goal in life was, but it wasn't school. I knew what it wasn't. I wore my leather fringe jacket everywhere I went, in the summer or in the winter. I wore my beads. I wore my ripped jeans. We were wearing ripped jeans, young people, way before you guys thought about it. You know? And I was sewing leather patches under my jeans before any designer ever came up with it. And I was just, you know, sort of a bum. I didn't like life. The day I graduated from high school, I put on my backpack and I left home. I burned all my bridges. And I thought, I didn't have any friends in high school. I was just a loner. And I went to Colorado, hitchhiked to Colorado, lived in the mountains. Then I hitchhiked to Houston, worked in the oil refineries. Then I went hitchhiked back to Webster City. And then I went to California and sat in an apartment for a month because I had ripped my hand open and couldn't get a job, wondering about the meaning of life. I thought maybe I'll become Simon and Garfunkel, me and my buddy. You know, we'll be the next Simon and Garfunkel. I don't know, I had all these ideas. I moved back home, and within a very short time, I came to know Christ. I realized how aimless, purposeless, empty, and lost my life really was. And more than anything else in my life, I wanted to make a contribution to life, to others. I wanted a life with meaning and purpose. So I came to Christ. A friend of mine, another hippie friend, led me to the Lord. He was a machinist part-time, so he got me a job as a machinist. We worked there part-time, and in our afternoons, we would spend talking about the Bible together, reading our Bible. We'd go up to the high school after school. We'd pass out literature to the students, and I'd go in and talk to all of my old teachers, share with them this wonderful life God had given me, because my life, it had been a mess. Within the very first week of coming to know Christ, I realized at that point in my life what I wanted to do with my life. I'd never known until that point. That point, I knew I'm going to be a pastor. That's what I'm going to be. No matter what I have to do to get there, as long as it's upright, of course, and fair and ethical, I'm going to do it. But I know that's what God wants for my life. Now, I never had a speech class, and I've never had any college education of any sort. Never had any sales training or any of that kind of stuff. Just me. I was determined. I had a vision. I had a dream. And I kept going after it, kept going after it. Well, all my other friends were out dating and messing around. I wasn't. I was focused on what I knew God wanted in my life. Told God, if you ever want me to get married, just bring her into my life. Boom, tell me this is the one. And boom, I'll marry her. That's all you got to say, God. But I don't have time for small talk and dating. I just don't have time for it. And that's exactly what God did. One day at this conference, almost two years later, met this girl, knew in 1 hour, this is the girl I'm going to marry. 2 weeks later, talked to her about her. 8 months later, got engaged. And 2 years, got married. 2 years from that time. Now, I don't have time to go into the story that involved perseverance during our engagement, but it was an unbelievable experience. And you can hear it on some of the other tapes I've done. We get married. I'm 23. My wife's 22. And the first year married, I made $3,000. My wife was home. She had a very bad back from automobile accident. That's what we lived on. You want to talk about poverty this morning? Do you want to talk about hardship? You try living on $3,000 and giving birth to your first child the first year you're married with no insurance. And driving a car that costs you $200 that you have to try to fix every other week on your own. And I bought all the tires at a junkyard. That's where I bought them, at a junkyard. And I have food stamps. And they have whatever there was to have. We kept striving. Next year we made $4,100, had our second child, no insurance. Now we had debts from my wife's school loans. She'd been in a bad accident. She couldn't work. Besides, we had decided it was our plan together that she would stay home with our children. That was our plan. You don't have to do that plan. That was our plan. We stayed true to our vision. We stayed true to what we knew God wanted us to do for our life, no matter what it cost us. And the next year, we made $4,300, our third year. And then I got started a business with a guy. It didn't involve a lot of capital, and it just died. We went back down to $3,000 that year. Then I got into another business with a guy. It went really good. We bought our first car because it was with the business, and then the business went under, and I sold the car back to the dealership, paying them $700 to take it back. We never went to the dentist the first 8 years we were married. We never went to the doctor, except if it was one of the children. Fortunately, we never got sick either, very sick. And we kept striving and striving and pressing and trying to work towards our dream, to get in the ministry and help other people. That's all we wanted to do with our life. And then, after about 6 years of marriage, it was about four, but it had been about 7 years since I'd come to know the Lord. Just when I thought it was finally, I got involved in a church where I thought I was going to be able to be a pastor. Just the opposite happened. They asked me to get totally out of leadership. They saw all these problems in my life, and there were problems in my life. I'd be the first one to admit it. And it was like the rug was pulled out from under me. Everything was devastating. Everyone knew me in the church. I helped with the music. I helped with a lot of other things. And it was like, Mark, you got a lot of problems in your life. You got to deal with them. It was a very humiliating experience. My wife, in the meantime, you know, I'll tell you something, ladies. If you had to live with me, and if you had to endure that, and if you saw some of the places we lived, and saw the things we didn't have, and went shopping together at the Goodwill, you probably would have left. Especially if you had to endure my temper and my personality quirks, especially in those early years. She didn't. She persevered. And I persevered, sometimes not knowing exactly how this was all going to work, or if it was going to. And I remember the day that I stepped down from that for the next 6 months. It was the first time in my life I felt empty again, directionless. I didn't know if God could use me again. It was the most discouraging time I ever had in my life. Finally, around Christmas, I decided, no, I'm going to pick up the baton and I'm going to go after it again, but I'm going to redouble my efforts. There are things that absolutely I have to face, I have to confront, they must change in my life if God is going to be able to bring this dream about. And it was hard, and it wasn't easy. And I'm going to get into some of those things in the following weeks. The things you will need to succeed. But finally, after 11 years, it happened. 11 years. 5 years ago is the first time we ever went to Target and spent $100. Unbelievable. Today, my family's taken care of. I have four children. And God is working in fantastic ways in this church. And it's not just because of me. I'm only a small part of that. There are many people involved. But what I want to tell you this morning is, when I talk about perseverance, I'm not talking about some platitude. I'm talking because I've lived there. Because I've been there. And I've seen the promises of God work. He keeps His word. And if you persevere, your marriage can be great. My marriage hasn't always been great. There were times I swore I was going to walk out of my marriage. There were times that with every emotion in me, I hated my wife's guts. And that's the truth. That's how I felt. Now, I didn't live that out very often, but that's how I felt. I felt shortchanged, ripped off. Man, everybody's against me. God, you're against me. I wrestled with all those kind of things. But I kept persevering towards that vision, towards that dream. And in the midst of that crucible of life, God even began to expand what I am seeing now happen. These were dreams. What's happening now, this auditorium was a dream years ago in my life. As I kept praying for it, asking God to do it, asking God to work. And now today, I make my living with my mouth. That would amaze my parents 10 years ago. That would amaze everybody who knew me 10, 15 years ago. It amazes me. God can do awesome things in your life if you will persevere long enough. No excuses. Persevere. Remember that you can become the things that you want to be if you'll persevere. I'd like to invite you back next week because there's much more to be said on this topic. I've only covered a couple of aspects this morning. There are at least four or five more principles and trademarks, character qualities that you need. And we'll get into those next week. Please join me next week. Let's bow our heads. Lord, I want to thank you this morning for your goodness and your grace in our lives. I want to thank you, Lord, so much that you can make us successful in our life, that you want to bless each and every person in this room today. Thank you, God, for the grace that you give us. You help us along the way. You encourage us, Lord. I don't know where I'd be today without your encouragement. If you hadn't stuck with me, Lord, I would have never stuck with myself. I would have quit years ago, Lord, if it hadn't been for your support, for your constant love and encouragement. If you hadn't believed in me, Lord, I tell you, I'd have never believed in myself. Thank you so much for your tenderness, for your gentleness, for your unlimited patience. Thank you, God, for your endurance, because there is no limit to your perseverance. Help us, Lord, in our lives, young or old here today, to know we can make it if we'll keep on going and not give up. In Jesus' name.